Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 646 for comics originally released on December 25th, 2019. Now, normally we'd be starting in DC, but, well, DC didn't really release anything new, so we're going to be starting in Marvel with Incoming Number 1. Now, this was a huge book.
Yeah, this was a meaty, meaty book.
I think it had around, like, 84 pages of story.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that. I didn't even check the solicit to see how many pages, and I wasn't going to count them, but it was very thick, and it took me a while to read it.
Yeah, I think it may have actually had close to 100 actual pages, but there was a bunch at the end that they used for some other stuff. So story pages, I think it was around 84-ish, but yeah. Even if I had counted it, I would have lost count by that point.
Yeah.
That puts it well over, you know, about the length of three times a regular Marvel comic, and even at $9.99, which is a little steep, it's only about 2.5 times the cost.
Exactly. It seems like when you buy in bulk, it's kind of like the warehouse mentality of going to a Sam's Club or whatever your wholesaler is out there. You buy in bulk, you get more at a little bit of a discount.
Yeah. So even at the $9.99 price tag, yes, it's expensive, but I wouldn't say it was overpriced for the amount of story pages we got.
I would agree with you there because, you know, we've had some $9.99 books that we've reviewed, namely the Marvel Comics 1000 I can think of, some of the, you know, highlight books that we did, like Action 1000 was a highly priced big book. But this one, I felt like it took me longer to read than a lot of those.
I would agree with that. And this one was kind of interesting because it does pick up from some story elements from Marvel Comics 1000.
Yes, it does.
And there was some very interesting stuff, particularly at the beginning with like the way the Eternity Mask is granting Masked Rider some powers and stuff like that, which I thought was cool.
Me too. It was really cool.
But I then quickly noticed that the story was shifting artists and actually writers, I think, as it switched characters.
Yep.
Noticeable, but generally worked. But it got to where the Masked Rider was in the story a lot less than I had expected, and the story jumped around a lot.
Yeah, it almost felt like a weird book where the writer picked up from the end of that previous writer's tale or story or, you know, snippet, whatever they were doing. But at the same time, it was linked together, but not linked together. And especially in the middle of the book, it felt like it fell off the rails. And I was like, okay, this has nothing to do with any of the stuff at the beginning. And then they kind of pulled it back in at the end.
There were a number of things here that I kind of questioned, and not necessarily in a bad way.
Okay.
You know, like, when and why did Captain Marvel get a Batcave?
Yeah. I was like, oh, this must be happening in the book, but I'm reading the book and that hasn't happened yet.
I'm not reading the book, so I had no clue.
Okay, and that hasn't happened to my knowledge.
Okay, and then, when did Doc Samson go back to his classic outfit and look and back to giving Bruce Banner therapy?
Yeah, it's almost like this is a look ahead, because a lot of stuff that I'm seeing in here is not happening in, like, the Immortal Hulk right now, you know, stuff like that.
And that's where I figured that would have happened, if it happened at all. But, I mean, to me, the big question is, why would Doc Samson even do – why would Bruce Banner even do that? Doc Samson has been Bruce Banner's therapist for literally decades of story – of comic book publishing time. I don't know how much story time. But I think the one thing we can all agree on, it hasn't worked.
It never works.
So they want to keep going down that route. Fine. Maybe something will change. I don't know. But there was a couple of things like that. It's like, okay, that's interesting. But with the story jumping around a lot, I mean, it was a little annoying in a few places.
Generally, yeah, I felt that.
Generally, it worked well. But it also kind of underscored how many things happened in this issue.
There is a lot going on. And almost the way I was reading this, it is. It's a look ahead of this is the stuff that's going to be happening. This is the stuff that's coming in a kind of an entertaining fashion, how it's weaving the books together and how they're going to be touching each other. So it's showing you it's an interconnected universe. But like you said, there's a few parts in here where it went a little bit too much and it frustrated me. For me, the particular point where I started getting frustrated was right around, I'm trying to remember, I put it in my notes here. I think it was the Fantastic Four. They kind of got away from the way the thing started with the stuff after that, when they got into like Hulkling and, you know, just it seemed like it was tying into the Iron Man 2020 stuff, and it wasn't dealing with the main thing at the beginning of the story. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think when they brought in the Fantastic Four and stuff, one, that felt a little different than how Fantastic Four has been when I'm reading it.
Yes.
But the whole bit when they bring in Hulkling and stuff like that, that was very much when it's a, okay, now we've got to start setting the scene for this Empire thing coming up.
Yeah, exactly. Because I was trying to read it and I was trying to say, how did these characters like Miles and Spider-Man and then Hulkling and I'm like, how did they tie in? And I'm like, okay, that's not tying in. Now we've gone to something completely different.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that sort of fits the bill of something I'd suggested a few times over the years, of kind of a backbone or spine sort of a title for a shared universe, where you get bits and pieces of kind of everything, and if this were to come out, say, I don't know, maybe quarterly or bi-monthly, and you got these kinds of things that allowed you to kind of tie into, oh, this is what's going on with the Fantastic Four, here's what's going on with the Hulk, Spider-Man, the Avengers, you know, whomever.
Yeah.
It can kind of sort of work. This was close. It didn't knock it out of the park in terms of getting it right, but it was along the idea of what I'd been suggesting.
I know exactly what you mean by that, because it almost sets the stage for if you were looking to jump into the Krakoa and the Bar Sinister and what's going on there. By reading this, you'll kind of be like, okay, and then it says, hey, that book's coming out in March. When you start reading, you'll almost have a little bit of a foundation and a little bit of a jumping on point for you, because you'd be like, okay, I know what's kind of going on.
Well, if they do something like this on a recurring basis, where it's something that you know it's going to either wind down or spin up one of the kind of quasi-event sort of things going on, in this case, Empire and then the Masked Rider type stuff.
Yep.
And it'll have enough things that you can kind of touch bases with the titles and characters you're not reading and maybe get interested enough in them to pick them up.
And that did, this book kind of did that for me. It wasn't the perfect example of that. But if I wasn't reading Captain Marvel, this probably would get me interested to maybe read what's going on in Captain Marvel based on where it's headed.
It's certainly more Captain Marvel than I've read over the last year.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. So it seems like it's a readjusting of the character to back to where you know.
Well, and it's one of those things that it had enough other things in it that I picked this up, so they got me there. And it was one of the more effective kind of I don't say clip show kind of things, but sampling of the rest of the Marvel Universe that I could have come out of this thinking I should go pick up this, that, and the other.
Yeah. So that's the same feeling I had. And reading this, I felt like I enjoyed this more than Marvel Comics 1000 or 1001, personally.
I think it was better executed than both of those. And I think it was also better executed than the Marvel Point One that they did and a few other sampler kind of titles they've done.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
So,
I'm sorry.
I think there's a way they could do this kind of a sampler touchstone kind of a book on either a bi-monthly or quarterly basis that would work.
Yeah, work well.
They just haven't totally cracked the code for it yet.
No, I agree with you there. And I think the thing that made this feel very coherent to me is you felt like the editor had all these people, even though they're dealing with a lot of writers and a lot of artists here, working together, because you can almost say the sentence ends this way with this story, and it literally picks up maybe the last line of that sentence, and the narrative picks up in the next panel of the next page, where you know they all communicated, hey, here's what I'm doing, here's what I'm doing, and here's how, and maybe send my page over to this guy, and this guy picks it up and runs with it. So it felt very good that way.
Yeah, I think it was a good mix of editorial and creative coordination that we don't see that often.
Yeah, I was very surprised by that, because we see almost a lack of coordination a lot of times, mm-hmm. and I was just really impressed with this.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of things I wasn't crazy about, like, you know, the little stuff they did with Herbie or whatnot, but it's like, fine, whatever, it fits in with what's happening over in the Iron Man title, so that kind of cross-continuity was cool.
Yep.
You know, seeing Mr. Fantastic interact with Jane Foster, that was kind of cool. Not a big moment, but it was fun.
Yeah, I agree. And you hit almost all of the big titles going on at Marvel, I feel like, in this book, you know, other than maybe a book here and there. But I mean, the majority of the titles are dealt with here, and I feel like it's a good place to just jump in and get your feet wet and get a taste.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some mixed feelings about the general concept for Empire going forward, but, you know, I'm going to get it, and I think it'll be good.
That's where I am.
You know, and I liked how this... They executed it reasonably well. It wasn't perfect. There were a couple of things that it's like I was expecting more of the Masked Rider and the Eternity Mask, We get some stuff with the 3X or whatever they were called again, and then that doesn't go anywhere. The Spider-Man stuff doesn't go anywhere. But as a sampling of the Marvel stuff at any one point in time, this was interesting. This was good. I'd like to see them repeat this and find a way to get this to be a little bit more cohesive. And, I mean, for a first pass at what could be a potentially recurring quarterly touchstone kind of coordination title, if you will.
Yeah.
This shows a lot of promise. Whether that's the direction they're going or not, I have no idea. It's one I think they should consider.
I agree with you wholly there. I think this is something that they really should do almost on a quarterly basis. So this one came out January 1st. I would like to see the next one, if there is a next one, you know, April 1st. Boom, here's where we are. Almost like a setting of the stage for this Empire thing and, you know, where all the characters are at that point and how it's interconnecting. And then, you know, almost like a wrap up, you know, you'll see the next one in July 1st, you know, the next quarterly thing. And so this could be a thing that they kind of get into this little cadence going along. And so you never really feel that lost, even if you're not reading, and I'm just picking on her, Captain Marvel right now, like you're not, or you're not reading the Fantastic Four right now, you kind of know what's going on with those characters.
Yeah, and it's got the ability to get people interested in stuff if you give a good enough hook here of, hey, what's going on there is relevant, it's important, and it's exciting because.
Yeah, and I was really impressed too. I mean, you know, the art changes from, you know, literally every four or five pages or whatever it is, you know, that they have here. But in general, the art in here was really good. I mean, it's very different, yet it was very solid. The writers were very solid. There's only a few things that I really didn't care for, but that's just because it's not for me.
Yeah, there were a couple of places where it was a little odd to see, you know, one character by one artist and then again by another artist a few pages later.
Yeah, that was weird.
You know, but I mean, they had good artists throughout this, and man, they had a huge creative team on this.
Yeah. And I was kind of surprised with that Iron Man, the reveal about, you know, who's flying around and stuff.
I was not the least bit surprised by that, but I've been seeing that coming for a bit. I think they've been building up to it over in the Iron Man title.
Yeah.
And I remember stuff back in the 80s with the Iron Man 2020 character.
Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha.
That, to me, it's like it was a missed opportunity if they didn't go that way.
Okay, so that was kind of cool that they went there, and I was like, and I also thought in that story, what a jerk.
Oh, yeah. As if Tony's not bad enough.
Yeah, we're going to get worse.
So it had some cool moments, again, with the interaction of some of the characters, and a few characters like the Blue Marvel we just don't see much of.
Exactly. We haven't seen him in forever, and then he kind of popped up, and he was a player, a character, throughout a few of the threads at the beginning, and then he came back to wrap things up almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's cool.
I do think there's a bit more they could have done to give this a little bit more of a through line, and some of the stuff felt like it was almost digression, and I don't say filler, but I mean, it wasn't tight enough, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, where I felt that, and I don't know if you felt this too, it was really around that Spider-Man and Hulkling type stuff.
The Hulkling type stuff, I see why they did, because it's, again, setting up the Empire stuff. The Spider-Man stuff I felt was a little extraneous and you could have gotten rid of. Some of the stuff with the Champions. Felt a little extraneous. The whole bit with Krakoa is setting stuff up, but didn't pay off within this.
Exactly. That was a frustration a little bit.
And there's a balance to be had with that, because not everything here is going to pay off here. It needs to be some setup and whatnot. But can you do it in a way where I don't feel that you're doing nothing but teasing this storyline, whereas in a few places it felt like a story was actually moving forward?
Yeah. But once again, you know, not to harp on the same thing or beat a dead horse, but I was just looking at that page in Krakoa, how it ended, you know, with that thing that happens, and the character that's referenced there. And then literally here you are, you know, boom, the next person that speaks is that character with the next writer. And so I can't thank them enough for the editor for getting everyone to coordinate like this. It's just so hard to do.
Yeah. This is the kind of thing that if they have regular creative summits and they've got a coordinated editorial team across the different books, this is the kind of thing that I think they could be doing on a regular basis and unifying the universe in a way that Marvel's generally decent about, but if they could get a little better at, man, could really pull people in from one title to another, to another, to another.
Yeah, I would agree. So, I mean, what was weird is I went into this and I was reading it and I really enjoyed it at the beginning. Then in the middle, it kind of lost me for a little bit with some of the things. And then it really pulled me in at the end, and it ended with, like, I guess a bang for the next big thing. And that got me excited for that. I want to read that now. I want to read the new event in 2020, April 2020.
Yeah, the fact that it's going to be a couple of months before that kicks off, I kind of get, because now people are hopefully excited about it and can pre-order it.
Yeah, exactly. This is actually perfect because it hasn't even shown up in previews yet. So I'm excited about it. I'm thinking about it. You're thinking about it. And so when that previews comes out, hey, let's get this thing. Or if I'm not a previews pre-order, I'll be thinking about it in the shop and I'll be chatting about it to the store owner who will hopefully order a copy extra or two for me.
Yeah. This wasn't perfect, but it had some interesting ideas, some fun moments, and yeah. I liked the shared universe aspect of it.
Me too.
So I went with an A- on this.
Ah, I'm right there with you. I gave it A- as well, and I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. And I am with you that I think this needs to be a quarterly thing. I don't think Marvel listens to us, but if they do, please do that.
If they've got a solid game plan, can make this quarterly and get better and better at it, and I think they can, man, that could really just kind of give that spine and that direction, that narrative cohesiveness to the Marvel Universe that could really kick it over the edge, and it's already doing well as it is.
I agree. I think it could be a real winner for them as far as getting people hooked. And the only other thing they may want to consider doing, if this becomes really popular, you know, if they drop this down to like a $4.99 type thing, like, you know, I know everyone has to get paid, but, you know, take one, you know, on the chin for everyone. I could see retailers putting this at the front desk, you know, and advising everyone, hey, check this out. When you're picking up your previews, buy this. You know, I definitely recommend this. And they'd probably sell more titles to that person.
If they could do it at the roughly 100-page count it's got now, get it down to around that $5 price point, keep the pages at the back of, hey, you're interested in this, here's where to go read it. It acts as marketing material as much as an actual comic, and that's where I think they can get the win.
Oh, yeah. That would be a killer.
I mean, the fact that it spent a good couple of pages of, hey, this is going to follow up over here, you may want to go check that out, that's where I think they really, you know, kicked it over the edge. Because if I just read this and it's like, well, that's interesting, but where would I follow thus and so? And I don't know.
What's the point?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, you and I are thinking the same thing on this. So it was a good read. And you lost out, DC. You didn't have a book.
Exactly, exactly. Shame, but, you know, hey, they knew when Christmas was going to be.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, guys. One book, one big book.
Something. Shall we move over to our next book?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Well, normally we do a Marvel book second, so let's do a Marvel book second, and it's Doctor Strange Surgeon Supreme number one.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that they really need another number one for Doctor Strange, but Mark Waid's been doing a really great job on it, so sure, why not? I am getting a little tired by the constant renumbering and stuff, but yeah. I think this had a different artist than before.
Yeah, I believe so.
And this does a pretty good job setting up Strange's new status quo, getting the story moving. And this whole, you know, he's not just the Sorcerer Supreme, but he's gotten his hands fixed so he can be a surgeon again.
Correct. So that's a big status quo change because that's kind of the origin of the character.
Yeah, and it's a direction they really haven't ever kind of gone with the character.
Yeah, and I'm surprised no one ever has. Now that I've seen Mark do it here, I was like, huh, I'm surprised that for all these years, you know, 50, 60 years, nobody's done that.
Yeah, yeah. It covered a lot of ground in this issue in terms of a little bit of a recap of his origin, you know, what it's like for him to be in the status quo as a doctor and how he's kind of making it work to where he's not a full-time doctor because he's a full-time a Sorcerer Supreme.
Yep.
You know, and I didn't expect the specific cliffhanger we got here, but I wasn't totally surprised there was something of that sort at the end because that's a little bit of, I don't say the way Mark Waid writes, but kind of fit.
Yeah, it does fit. He always gives you something to be like that, oh my gosh, you know, what's going to happen next moment that makes you want to come back and read the second issue. And to your point about, you know, this going over his origin and everything, what's weird is I read this and, you know, this being a number one that kind of picked up from the stuff that happened at the last, you know, episode or chapter or whatever you want to call it, this did feel like a good jumping on point because of that recap of his origin, which everyone will recognize for who's watched the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I think if you've got a passing familiarity, you're good going in. Even if you don't, they cover enough of it that you can figure it out. You know, they tell you what you need to know.
Exactly. They tell you the basics. And, you know, a lot of number ones, a lot of writers just don't do that in a first issue. So I applauded him for doing that. And but I was kind of curious about some of the stuff that happened in him with the use of his hands.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was a little curious about some of the stuff at the end.
Yes.
But it was one of those that stuff was going great for Steven at the beginning of this, so of course stuff's not going to go so well at the end. I mean, where's the fun if his life's all, you know, hey, he's a doctor again, he's a Sorcerer Supreme, he's got it all.
Life is perfect.
Let's take it away from him.
Yes.
You know, stuff has to go bad, otherwise, you know, what's the point of a story?
Definitely. Yeah, I was amazed. I was like, I was expecting to see I'm struggling to regain my skill set from being a surgeon because I haven't used my hands for how many years has it been? Who knows? You know, in comic book terms, it could be 10 years, it could be 20 years. I just have no clue.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, apparently he has his skills.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought it was a fun issue.
It was fun.
The solicit mentions a potential horror component to the series.
I didn't feel that. Did
you? Yeah, I was going to say, it wasn't really evident here, but if it does come in, that may make me rethink getting the series.
Yeah, I could see that, because you wouldn't like that. I mean, the only thing that I could see kind of horror-like is the manifestation of the diseases, and then the character has a scary face, but that's not really horror to me. I mean, yeah. That's stuff you see in Doctor Strange anyways.
I mean, that first page, when we've got the visual explanation for the tumor or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy about that, but they've done it before. And if that's all we got, I'm fine with that. If it starts getting a bit more than that, it could turn me off.
Yeah, so he's writing a fine line here with you just because of your taste.
Exactly. There's certain things I just don't enjoy. But Mark Waid's been doing a really good job with this character and gone in a number of different directions with the character. And it's fun to see the constant kind of pivot points, but in ways that are making sense and are motivated by the story.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. And, you know, knowing Mark Waid and having read many of the things that he's written over the years, and I'm starting to read some of his DC stuff that he's written, I don't see him going down the path of like an Immortal Hulk with Dan Abnett, that type of horror. I just don't see him going there. I mean, it may be a little bit of a darker tone, but I just don't see the gruesomeness coming out of what he does.
Yeah, I don't think it'll happen that way either. I think it would be more of almost a suspense kind of a thing, but magic has a price. That's the kind of quote-unquote horror I would expect to get here.
Yeah. Now, just out of curiosity, did you know the big bad at the end of the book?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I was vaguely familiar, and I remember, but I didn't remember in detail, so I didn't look it up, but I didn't know if you were familiar with them.
Yeah, and it's one that is not a big bad typically that Strange would go up against.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, I don't remember that being, you know, them going against each other.
But given the nature of the big bad, it made sense and it was interesting choice. And I think it goes and touches on some of the previous stuff Wade's done with Doctor Strange. In terms of the run he had when Strange goes out into space to go find mystical artifacts, because there's more than just spell kind of magic.
Exactly. Yes, definitely.
and that take right there that he had done opened up the sci-fi realm, the artifact realm, and, you know, the space and cosmic kind of stuff. And not that that had never been in Doctor Strange before, but it opened some new doors and was a different kind of a storytelling. So to see an indirect, I don't want to say a callback to that, but you know, kind of reverberation of those ideas and stuff was kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I like that he's kind of broadened the character, yet it's very true to who the character is.
Mm-hmm.
So I even liked it when he took him into space. I didn't see anything wrong with that or weird with that. It's something that not every person does when they write Doctor Strange, but I really enjoyed that.
Well, and Doctor Strange is a character that's gone in tons of different directions over the decades. Matter of fact, there was a run, I'm going to say in the 90s, where it's like every six issues, it's like here's a sharp left turn kind of a thing of let's try this, let's try that. But Wade's been finding new and different places to go, which is fun.
Exactly, yeah.
So I thought this was a solid read. The art wasn't as much to my liking as the previous series, but it was still solid, told the story well. So for me, this was a solid B, and if you haven't been checking out Doctor Strange lately, I think you should.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that last volume of Doctor Strange was really, really good. Mark Waid's a terrific writer. Kev Walker, like you said, the art not to my liking as much as the previous artist, but this was still really solid. And I give it a B+, and I think this is a good jumping on point. If you haven't read it and you're interested in reading Doctor Strange, this may be something you want to jump on.
Yeah, and the fact that it was so accessible for number one shouldn't need to be pointed out, but I think it does need to be pointed out, unfortunately.
Sad, but true.
So kudos on Wade for treating the readers with respect and actually giving them a good jumping on point for the first issue.
Yeah, I agree. So many number ones we read in, it's like, what's going on here? I'm confused.
Well, we've read some that are actual number ones of a new property. There is no previous material to have known, and it's like, I don't know what's going on.
I'm completely lost after having read this.
So that gets frustrating.
Yes.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Sounds good.
This is The Marked number 3 from Image, and yes, I know we discussed the first issue of it not all that long ago, but this was actually the only other comic I got this week, so it seemed like an obvious choice to me.
Yeah, I figured this would be the one. I know what you subscribed to. So.
Yeah, and it was a small week for Christmas, but at least they came out with something, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
This is one that David Hein's doing some of the writing, Haberlin's doing the art, and Haberlin's also working on the story and stuff. I'll be honest, I had originally gotten this because I find Haberlin's art style using computer-generated art fascinating and whatnot. But really, I mean, the story is moving along pretty good here. We get to see what's going on with the government project and stuff. We get some backstory on magic in this world. And we get some ramifications of what that government project is up to and what's going on there. So I felt they covered a lot of ground here fairly well. And, you know, we're 3 issues in, and the story has moved along. We're not just waiting for it to get going.
I would agree that this has moved really at a, I don't want to even say a quick pace, but a lot has happened while at the same time being very digestible, which is hard to do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it feels like they give you too much to read or too much information. Sometimes they take too long and they spread everything out. This seems like the perfect sampling size for each issue of what I can digest and retain.
Yeah. And it's moving along without rushing along.
Yeah, very much so. And even though, like you said, the computer generated art, it's kind of cool. I've gotten used to it because they do that with the books that he does. And I would think, you know, when I was reading Sonata and I was reading this, Sonata was more to my liking as far as the genre, but this has been more to my liking, even though this isn't my favorite genre. But both of them are really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would have been enjoying this title. I like the good side, the bad side, the new Shadowgate thing with the government, and just all the plot threads and twists and turns that happen in here. And he keeps me engaged to where I remember what happened the last issue, even though it was a month ago. And that's what a lot of books don't do right now.
Yeah, I think this is one where it's a sufficiently different sort of a story that helps there too. But it's also an engaging enough story. And I think it's also a matter of each issue has enough meat to it.
Yes.
That there's something to actually remember from the last one.
Very much so. And I've liked the use of magic in here. Like, you know, magic, there's nothing wrong with, you know, people are creative and they come up with different ways that they think magic should work. But I like the idea of having the tattoos in here and how the tattoos give you certain powers and they can be used for certain things and the control of those things. So it's been really cool that all those facets of the whole magic world that's been built in here.
Yeah, and the fact that it's got its own system of magic and stuff, and we're 3 issues in and we have a decent enough understanding, not all the minutiae or anything, but enough to see, oh, you could transfer the tattoos that shouldn't be done, but it's working. Here's why, here's how, and that kind of stuff is kind of cool.
Yeah, very cool. So I've been really into the worlds that Brian Haberlin's been building here and in Sonata and David Hein, I guess should say. And it hooks me. The characterization's really good in here. You know, there's the good, there's the bad. There's what happened and how they're reacting with each other. A little bit of drama, but just enough, you know, not teen angst, but something I could see an angry teen. What would happen if you cross them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I enjoy all that stuff.
Yeah, the character motivations kind of make sense. Given that had happened, I could see where this character would be unhappy and do this.
Exactly. So it rings true versus I don't like sometimes when some writers write teens, it seems like it comes off weird. here it seems very true to the characters, and I just really enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's been a fun read. Now, the other thing to point out with this is, since this is one of Haberlin's title, it has kind of that usual augmented reality feature and stuff that a lot of the titles have.
Yep.
Now, I actually played around a little with that, so I downloaded the app onto my phone. And for this issue, what it's got is you use your phone, the camera on it, look at the page. It takes it a second to kind of lock in and recognize the page. But once it does, there are these three things that you can kind of drag down the page. One gives you the script, one gives you the black and white artwork, the other gives you the colors.
Oh, that is really cool. So you can almost see the process.
Yes. And
that is awesome.
I think phrasing it as you can almost see the process is a very apt way to put it, because particularly with the script pages on my cell phone, which is just a regular sized cell phone, a little hard to read the script.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
you need an iPad Pro or something.
Exactly, an iPad Pro or something like that with a bigger display, higher res display, that would certainly help. I'd almost rather have gotten a digital copy of the script and those things that I could read on the computer, but it was cool having those added features and stuff.
Yeah, and for him to do that, I mean, it takes extra work, and he keeps a schedule and keeps his work coming out on time. So he's a very efficient. He's an efficient user of his time, and that he's able to do this plus do all the add-ons while doing these two books that he's completely creating. That's just amazing.
Well, he's a clever guy, because as a software engineer myself, not that I would know how to do exactly what he's doing and stuff, but conceptually, you've got something in this app that's saying, here's the page to recognize, and then a standard widget for the drop-down or the pull-down kind of a thing that links
reference
to
this and this.
The script page for the page, the black and white for the page, and the colors for the page. So once you've kind of got that structure set up,
Pretty easy then at that point.
It seems like you should just be able to drop in, here are the pages and the other stuff to go drop in, you know, and then just boom, you've got the full augmented reality almost, I don't say for free, but for minimal additional effort.
And he probably set that up a long time ago when he first did that weird sized oversized book Anomaly. And he probably built all the stuff around there and then just has to tweak the structure of the program, pull for this, this, and this, and then update the pages and boom, done.
Even if he didn't do it for that, I know for the Witchblade Medieval Spawn thing, it had the process pages. So the bottom line is he had the mechanics of it figured out, and he knew what artifacts out of his process were needed to make it work.
Now, I don't know a lot about this creator, but is he a programmer?
He is an artist with a bit of a technical bent. I think he has other people doing the actual augmented reality programming, but I'm not certain.
Okay, I just didn't know if you knew. Maybe he did something with that.
I know he is involved with it, but I don't know how much of it is, hey, this would be cool to do, of his idea, and how much he's executing on it or having other people help execute on.
Well, that's cool. Well, I've just been really impressed with this creator, because he's been going on and he's really been knocking it out of the park with two books at the same time, which there are other creators who do that. But, you know, consistently just giving me a lot of meat on the bone with every issue that comes out. And so I've just been very happy. I couldn't care less about digital art versus, you know, they drew it with a pencil and paper. I mean, yes, one, you know, you can turn around and sell it, maybe as an original artwork. But to me, it doesn't matter as long as it's good art and I can look at it and enjoy it.
Exactly. And I think there are certain things he's able to do on a faster basis this way, which is allowing him to do multiple titles at once.
Yeah. So if you did a comic in the future, would you go with like this type of setup, a digital art where you can
absolutely
do something? Yeah. I have an artist over there.
I mean, the advantages you get out of it are just so many. Now, granted, I don't think I've got the skill to do it, but I definitely would want to use similar tools to what he's doing. Not to say his exact process flow and stuff, but you get so much ability to say, you know what, I want to reframe that scene if we were just if the camera was just a little off to the right or something like that.
Yeah. Well, this is a joke that's not fully in taste, but I bet Gary Frank wishes he would have done this with Doomsday Clock.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of titles we've read over the years that you don't even need computer-generated art. There's a couple where it's like, you know, they just use the same panel six times.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I just listened to that podcast today where you guys did the comics and you were talking about how many pages had been redone. I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. The fact that either the story went under so many changes or whatever that he had to go through and basically draw, you know, I think I heard like 150 extra pages or something for that book. It's like, that's insane.
That's what I was like, oh my gosh, I would just feel bad for him at that point. That's so much work. Hey, but as long as he got paid for all of it, it's okay.
He certainly ought to have been paid for it. If not, something's wrong. And it'd be fun for those to get released in some kind of, you know, behind the scenes extra, just so we could see where the story could have gone.
Yeah, the work that got cut and where we were headed, that would be awesome. I would pay to read that collection.
Yeah. For me, though, I think Haberlin's doing some fun stuff here. He's built up yet another interesting world. David Hines certainly is helping with that a lot.
Yeah.
But I, too, am enjoying what Haberlin's doing, not just from the process junkie point of view, but the end story is actually really well done and engrossing and different than a lot of stuff we're getting that I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I would agree with you there.
This was a solid B for me and a title I think people ought to be checking out.
Yeah, I've been very generous in 2020. It's our first recording of 2020.
Technically, I'm considering this a 2019 because of the release date, but it is the first recording of 2020.
That's true. But because I'm just going to give it a little bit more. I give it a B+. I really enjoyed it. Solid book. And one thing I would also say is for an issue number 3, which we reviewed this not that far apart from the last issue because of the lack of material from December 25th. But, you know, a lot of times a book at an issue number 3, it's kind of getting into that middling ground of the 6-issue arc where not as much is happening. And that didn't happen here, which I really appreciate because usually it seems like boom, boom, bang, big beginning, a lull in the middle, and then a big crescendo at the end. And this one seems to have everything flowing and at a consistent level and pace continually. And I like that.
Yeah, I think for a lot of arcs, you've got the, wow, this is exciting first issue. The second issue is kind of resolving the twist ending at the beginning of the first.
Yep.
3 and 4 are a little, we've just got to move the story along, but not do a whole lot. 5 is setting up the big, you know, finale, and then the 6th is the big finale.
Yeah, sometimes it lands and sometimes it doesn't. So we were reviewing traditionally I guess you could say, a bad issue in a 6-issue arc, which is what we've kind of moved to as an industry.
Certainly, it's one of the more challenging ones to do really well, and I think this was one that they did a good job on because the story keeps moving forward.
Yeah, so I applaud them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, kind of cool. I was really surprised, though, that, you know, over December 25th that, you know, Marvel had some books come out. You know, of course, not as much as normal. And even Image and a few other publishers had some, you know, stuff here and there. But I was surprised DC couldn't even have one book. I don't know why. It's just very weird.
I don't know. I was disappointed by that, but I'm not going to say I was horribly surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember. You probably remember better than I do. The last time that we had a Wednesday on Christmas, did they produce stuff? Do you remember?
There was another year where about 7 comics came out total, and I think it was Drew and I, and we reviewed all of them.
That's nice.
But this is one of those where, because I was getting a lot more then, so I was getting most of them, if not all of them. This is everything I got this week.
So all 3 of them. Well, hey, you picked some gems.
Yeah, it was good stuff. I enjoyed it, and it was nice having a smaller week. But, you know, I ended the year current on my reading with no massive reading frenzy, so I was happy with that.
Yep.
Next week's going to be a little small for me, too. I think I've only got maybe 11 things maybe coming.
Yeah, I'm bigger than that, but it's a small week for me, too. I guess January and February, they just tend to start off very small because everyone's recuperating from the holidays.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is that. Just, you know, they know it's a bit of a dead time in terms of sales and whatnot, and so they just don't, you know, lean into it too heavy a lot of times.
Yeah, and that's one thing I did appreciate about your last Mayor Report, the comics one specifically, is it was kind of cool hearing you and Eric and Sam talk about that, but how Eric specifically, he's like, you know, if you plan for the lulls, the business is very predictable. And it's almost like more risky, you know, he's talking about certain things that are really hyped and maybe if they don't hit. But he's like, if you know every year that you're going to have a drop off in January and February before things start to ramp up in March and April, that you can almost prepare for it, you know, loosen your belt up a little here, tighten it up here, and have a reserve here at this time because you know you're going to need it.
Well, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if Eric and James at Cowabunga and other smart retailers are basically figuring they've got a couple of weeks like this where people are going to come in, oh, there's just not much. What else do you recommend? And have those recommendations ready.
Yeah, this is the time to have some stuff. And that's why I think this incoming title was so smart. One, yeah, at $9.99, it's going to pick up, you know, generate some dollars for people who die, you know, buy it in the store. But also, it can be a thing that hooks people on so many other things. Because if they're there, there's not a lot to buy. Okay, well, check this out. And by the way, you might, if you want to get prepared for it, read a trade on this or that or the other.
Exactly.
Yeah, so get your fan base prepped for the future.
Well, and if you're going to do a $10 book, doing it on a fifth week, essentially, or an otherwise small week, is a smart move because there's less things competing for the dollar at that point.
I agree. So, yeah, it was kind of a light week for me, too, but it let me be able to be current, so I'm completely current as well. I usually don't get behind because it stresses me out. And I actually read a couple trades, which was nice, and you know, nothing amazing, but I did read a thing called Mrs. Tree. It was a trade paperback from the Hard Case Crimes over at Titan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of weird. It was like a old school crime noir, but it felt very like 70s, but I think it was more 80s-ish. But I think it was written more recent than the 80s. But they like to use that, you know, time frame when there wasn't too much technology where everyone's jumping on their cell phone and filming everything.
The Miss Tree stuff I've read over the years, and I'm trying to remember who the creator of that is. It's not Mike Barr. It's Max Allen Collins, isn't it?
Yeah, that's him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you remember it. And they published it at DC at one point, I guess.
They published it at DC at one point. I think that was the run I read. It's got kind of that crime noir kind of a thing going on. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed it. So I read that, and I'd never read this, and I was surprised it was at DC. And he kind of wrote this whole piece. He's like, hey, I'm writing this now. This is not the first issue or the first, you know, volume of it, but I'm starting here. It says volume one, but it actually takes place in the middle. So it was really cool, and I enjoyed it, and they have more of it coming out in 2020, so I'm on board for it.
Cool. No, that's some good stuff. There have been a couple of different mystery-type titles over the years that have really stood out. The other one that I liked, and it's been ages since I've read it, was The Maze Agency. And again, I'm blanking on who wrote that, but it was one that was kind of a fair play, done in one, done in two kind of mystery stories.
Oh, okay. Really good.
Fun stuff that you could actually try to solve as you go along.
Oh, I like that. That could be really, if they write it the correct way, it could be really entertaining.
Yeah, and it was fun stuff. It's been ages since I read it. That was, I think, in the 80s. I think it was by Eclipse, but honestly, I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, it seemed for a while like Titan was coming out with this Hard Case Crimes. They were coming out with it on a rapid succession, and then they kind of laid back on it, and now you get a trade here and there, you know, just randomly.
Yeah, I don't think they're leaning into that as much as they used to. They're not doing quite as much with the authors as they used to, as far as I could tell, but I haven't been paying close enough attention, so I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, they pulled back a lot, it seems like.
Yeah, and that's not a bad move. I think they were overproducing for a little bit. And doing a little too much with the Doctor Who and stuff, and I think slow and steady wins the race on some of this stuff.
I agree. I'd rather them whittle it down to what's manageable and not have a lot of overstock where it's going to kill them with their budget.
Or flood the market that the consumers can't get all of it.
It's true. Yeah, right now DC and Marvel are doing, especially Marvel, enough of the flooding.
Yeah.
But good stuff.
Good stuff, definitely. So, we're recording this on January 2nd. Previews came out either yesterday or today, depending if your shop was open on the 1st. Preview Spotlight 147 for the January previews. The deadline for that is Saturday morning, January 11th. We did move that to back a week just because previews came out a week later than I had originally thought. Regular format, one clip per pick, send in stuff. There should be plenty of great things. I've also put up the thread and have announced the preview spotlight 148 for the February previews. And yes, this is early for me to do it. The reason for that is I need to do this episode in advance. So the deadline for that is going to be Saturday morning, January 25th, which is as late as I can make it. And the game plan for this previews is one clip per person and just what titles, new or old, should people check out and why. You could do one title, you could do multiple titles, whatever. And just, you know, again, like we were talking about Maze Agency, Mystery, there's plenty of other hidden gems out there in the past or more current stuff. What do you recommend and get people going on that?
Yeah, and I like those episodes. They're a lot of fun because what you're passionate about might not be what I'm passionate about and vice versa. But sometimes if I tell you what I'm passionate about and why, you may actually sample it. And that's what happens a lot of the times with me, especially when we did, I think we did one of these a while back.
We did one about a year ago, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun just hearing people and what they're reading and the different things where they're not pinned down to just what's in previews even. They would say, hey, I've been reading this trade paperback that's not even in previews, or I've been reading this series. Here's why. You need to check it out and read it. And if there happens to be a collection or there happens to be in previews, all the better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even if it's one where people got to hunt down back issues or something, if they know to go hunt them down and you can sell them on why they should, there's a win to be had there.
Exactly. It makes it a lot of fun.
And then for the March previews, we'll be back to our regular format. That one's going to come out February 25th. Deadline for that, it'll be March 7th. I'll try to get that set up before too long and stuff. And that'll be back to the regular format, one clip per pick.
Cool. Sounds good.
So, anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Harley Quinn number 69 from DC, Tarot number 1 from Marvel, and Thor number 1 from Marvel.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.